live from the List Track Recording Studio. This is Email Marketing Today. Here are your hosts, Ross, Matt, and Brent.
And welcome to this week's edition of Email Marketing Today, our continuing podcast series with your host, Matt Elliott, Client Services Director of List Track. And with me today, I have Brent Schroyer, our Product Development Manager.
Hey, Matt, how's it going?
I'm doing well, Brent, thanks. And Ross Kramer, our CEO.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Ross. We're just having some discussion prior to coming live here, and one of the things we wanted to talk about are some of the news and current events that are going on in the email world today. And one of the things that was announced this week is ReturnPath's partnership with Yahoo to provide their feedback loop. There's been a long time coming that Yahoo hasn't had a public-facing feedback loop sign-up aspect or process, and now they've partnered with ReturnPath to manage that process. And so now clients can get on that and set it up pretty simply now.
Or did they have a feedback loop and they pulled it?
That is true. They did have a public-facing feedback loop sign-up process last winter, January, February. Is up for about 2.5 months, and they had some technical difficulties and ended up pulling that sign-up page. There were some ways to get onto the feedback loop if you knew some of the right channels at Yahoo.
Yeah, there's been some big demand for it. You know, people have been asking. It's nice to finally have a release.
Yeah, definitely. And for those who don't know what a feedback loop is, that's just the process whereby the ISP, in this case Yahoo, can send back any abuse complaints or spam complaints back to the email service provider or the sender of the message so that that abuse complaint can be processed and unsubscribed and recorded and marked and tracked.
You know, it's not not on the same topic as the feedback loop for Yahoo, but I was reading an interesting blog post out on the Yahoo developers blog about what they're doing it with some open source cloud computing initiatives. This came through in the ESPC, Email Service Provider Coalition, a group that we're a member of. It came through in that sort of newswire about what Yahoo's doing. They're kind of tapping in. I don't know what they're doing or how they're doing it, but they're tapping into some open source cloud computing resources to fight spam. And that's pretty kind of interesting thing to see that we've got some cloud computing stuff happening and kind of supercomputer stuff that's happening to actually do some real good on in the world.
Yeah, in that article, I think they even used the term supercomputer concept with the processing power that they're tapping into by bringing all these computers together. And what was interesting to me is that they're kind of going back to content. They're doing a lot of heuristic scanning of content, and the goal is to really identify and come up with a better algorithm to identify spammers. And looking at the content, looking at the links, looking at the phrases and the headers, and really trying to really pinpoint a way, and I guess the goal is to really speed up the process of blocking some of these botnets and identifying a lot quicker the incoming spam sources so that they can put up quicker blocks and protect their inboxes.
Go ahead, Brent.
I think one of the challenges there is, you know, kind of coming up with that fingerprint, you know, picking out the certain parts and pieces that they can easily pass on in a speedy manner off so that they can kind of have that across the network.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the goal.
Interesting that there's no reputation component to that. So your take was that it was content specific towards content.
Yeah, that particular initiative was geared towards content, and that doesn't supersede, and I don't think it is intended to supersede their reputation checking that they still do. And I think it's just an additional measure that they're trying to do. I mean, the stats show that they process over 1 billion pieces of spam a day, and they're just really trying to stop that at the gate as quickly as possible.
And I'm sure their partnership with ReturnPath, I'm sure that, you know, as part of that partnership, there's probably some more reputation services being available there.
Yeah, you would imagine so. I mean, that is ReturnPath's real bread and butter.
Exactly.
And, you know, they manage reputation services for quite a few ISPs. I know that they pump that information into a big database, and they're going to, you know, that information coming from Yahoo into that reputation database is really going to help the ISP, you know, space in general, you know, help manage their reputations.
So that reputation database is called their Sender Score database, which is publicly available at senderscore.org. Did the announcement say anything about making the Yahoo data available within senderscore.org? Because I know historically, I think SpamCop was kind of one of their sources, and they had kind of some other, you know, unknown sources, so to speak. Yahoo represents a huge pool of reputation data that you can now dip into. Did you see anything?
I do not recall specifically seeing that, but I can look at, I received the CenterScore reports for our own IP addresses, and I could take a look at that report in the morning and see if that is now an additional column that they're tracking on that report.
You know, guys, in one of our future podcasts here, we should try and get one of our friends from Return Path on the line. We could ask some of these questions directly to those guys.
That is a good,
absolutely
good idea, Brent.
Yeah, definitely. And another piece of information that came out of that announcement is that Yahoo's now on board also with the CenterScore certified program, meaning that for people who are already signed up on the Return Path CenterScore certified program, you know, that allowed them to get messages into the inbox at Hotmail and with images and links displayed, that Yahoo's now on board with that program as well. So if you're in the CenterScore certified program, you should be seeing those same benefits with your Yahoo addresses.
And Matt, for the guys that are listening in on podcasts that don't really know what that means, tell them a little bit about kind of accreditation, what that's all about.
Sure. Accreditation is the process of, well, basically it's a third party, in this case RetournPath, that will help ISPs bridge the gap with understanding senders' reputation. So they'll do the reputation background check for the ISP and do some due diligence and do some research and essentially come up with a way to identify who the good senders are. And when you've gone through the process of getting accredited through RetournPath and you've filled out the information, they've had a chance to analyze your bounces and your abuse complaint rates at the various ISPs, when they've gone through that process and basically accredited you as a sender, you have the ability then to pay a license fee with RetournPath, and with their partnership with the ISPs, that license fee and that accreditation basically gives you a pass into the inbox with your images displayed and your links enabled.
And many times it's not a direct pass, but it may be a pass through some of the more the bigger filters.
Yeah, depending on the ISP, yeah. It depends. Depending on the ISP, how deep that pass gets you in, exactly. Past the filters varies. But in a lot of the cases, it gets you past all the primary filters. But there might still be some roadblocks depending on some of your habits.
Now, the images being displayed by default is pretty huge. I mean, you know, when you're talking about flipping through your inbox and having to take that additional action to display your images, you know, and when you do have the certification, when you are certified to actually see those images right away, you know, on load, is, you know, it's pretty huge.
Well, Matt, you've recently done some number crunching on that, have you not? Do you have any stats off the top of your head in terms of what some of the certified mail and the accredited mail has kind of netted out to our clients?
Sure. Yeah. We've seen jumps and increases in click-through percentages in the 150 to 200% range.
Wow.
Open jumps from like 50 to 80%. So it's definitely showing a real true benefit for our clients.
At ISPs like Yahoo and AOL.
And Hotmail.
And Hotmail.
Yeah, that really hit me. Like the other day, I was just doing some tests, you know, signing up for a whole bunch of different newsletters, and I set up a brand new account. You know, usually I actually turn images on by default just because I like to see, you know, see all the images, see the branding right up front. But to actually kind of start with a fresh new Yahoo account and see, you know, what a user that just signs up and without changing any settings, you know, what they're seeing, and you know, seeing all these images broken, and then you have your certified email in there, and bam, you know, you've got the beautiful creative. I mean, it's huge, you know, when you're flipping through the inbox. Box like that.
And it's even huger, if that word, I'm making up a new word.
That's a word of the day.
That's right. The word of the day, huger. It even has a bigger impact for the marketer. And that is getting those messages with their creative, with their action hero shots in there. And, you know, you spend a lot of time as a marketer putting together powerful pieces that are designed to move somebody to action. And imagery is a big part of that. And to know that as a marketer that your images are going to have that impact and be displayed is huge. And it also helps, like the newsletter, the clients out there that are sending newsletters or other types of email that have paid for advertising. And now they can go to their advertisers and say, look, I'm accredited or I'm certified. Now I can get those, you know, I can get your ads displayed by default. And the links, you know, the links back to you working by default, that really helps out those kinds of people in that business model.
And, you know, the costs aren't that incredible. You know, I know everybody's looking at costs these days, right? But the costs aren't that huge. I know with CenterScore Certified, it's a sort of a yearly licensing model, which is, you know, really not that bad. GoodMail's model is probably a little bit more pricey, perhaps, because it's on a CPM basis versus kind of a yearly license. But they both offer some kind of distinct, unique approaches.
Especially when you talk about the return and you look at the statistics that Matt's been quoting here, and you know, you look at the return there on that price, it's a great ROI.
It's pretty easy, given as measurable as email is, you can surely prove it out.
Definitely. And then also on the Goodmail side, on that pricing with the Goodmail, they have some discounted pricing through the ESPs. So if you're working with an ESP and you're interested in going that route, the pricing can come down because they have discounts offered to their channel partners like us. Next topic we have, or did you have anything else you wanted to add?
The only other thing I wanted to say for those of you who have still been following us this far in is a little plug to our page at Twitter, twitter.com/listtrack. So you can follow us there. Be our 69th follower. We're looking for more followers. I posted to our Twitter account today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I saw that Google, the Wunderkind, the company that, you know, in the eyes of many can do no wrong, is shuttering their print advertising division.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they're pulling the plug on that guy.
I didn't hear about that.
You know, that's the one where you could go into your AdWords account create an ad on New York Times. So not good for the New York Times. More bad news. I just saw Gannett, USA Today, talking about a week-long furlough this spring where everybody goes home for the week.
Yep. Unpaid vacation.
Yeah. Ouch. And so, you know, the print world continues to get beat up, and we, you know, surely don't want to kick anybody while they're down. But it's interesting to note that even Google, who's got a lot of smart guys working on this, can't seem to make the print thing happen. So probably a good transition to our A/B split testing.
Yeah,
you know, talking about an industry where people are getting a high return, in fact, quite possibly the highest return, and how to get a higher return. We just authored a white paper released. Is it released today? Is it out on our website today? So it's out on our website today.
You go to the resources area. We can get all of our white papers.
And 15 must try A/B split tests just in time coordinated in our release of our split testing tool. Brent, you don't happen to have any stats on how many folks are using our split test tool yet, do you?
I don't have any statistics on that.
Maybe next week we'll come back.
Hopefully everyone. Yeah. Everyone should be using split tests. I mean, really when it comes down to it, you've never heard anything bad come of it. It's only going to improve your marketing going forward. It's only going to show you the right moves. I mean, you can predict anything. You can make any kind of educated guess you want, but the only way you're going to actually see whether you're right is by testing it.
I like to say you don't know what you don't know, and the only way to know what you don't know is to test.
There you go.
So a lot of different ways to skin the cat.
And the white paper has a lot of, you know, useful tips and tricks on how to strategize your testing and what items you can test, subject lines, content. There's a lot of different things you can test, but there's nowadays with tools like, you know, the A/B split testing tool within ListTrack, it's so easy to do. I almost want to say to the marketers that aren't testing, shame on you. I mean, there's really no reason to not be testing. The time involved really isn't that great. I know a lot of people are under a lot of time pressures, but to have that little bit extra, you know, assurance that you're really going with the piece of creative or the subject line that's going to have the greatest impact is really worth that little bit of extra time and effort to do the test.
And, you know, I've been in some of those marketing meetings where, you know, people, you know, you're kind of arguing back and forth on this is going to work or that's going to work. This is going to work, you know, and you have really strong opinions. But, you know, again, the only way you're going to know is by testing it and looking at your results. Now, one thing you have to be careful of when you're testing with email marketing is when you might have a complete even split with your A/B sends. But then you have to look at your bounces. You have to take into the fact that, you know, depending on how many bounces you have there, you have to kind of, you know, do a little bit of math as far as making sure that you're kind of adjusting you're looking at your results based on that split.
Yeah, making sure you have an apples to apples comparison. Exactly. and that the numbers match up. Absolutely.
Just something to be careful of.
Sure. And then one other thing to be wary of, and this was from a webinar we did back in November, I believe it was, with Herschel Gordon Lewis. And one of his discussion points was about testing and how important it was and what a big proponent he was of it. But he also threw in a little bit of a caveat in there. And that is, if you do an A/B split test, what you're determining is which of those two is best, but it's not necessarily what is best. And in other words, continue to work on your testing methodology, continue to push the envelope a little bit, and don't rest on your laurels just because you got a particular result back from a particular test, because there might have been a better way to test. And continue to put your thinking cap on and really push the envelope and understand what really drives readership and what drives call to action. Make sure you're testing the right elements.
You always want to test against your baseline. I mean, your baseline is basically what worked before. What has worked up until this point? Now, what can I try and improve against? So you always want to test against that continually, that continuing baseline, to make sure that you're doing the right thing.
Sure.
And, you know, trying to beat that. But probably would make sense to maybe step through quickly Megan's 15 tests that you could do, starting with the first one, which is testing delivery days and times.
Yeah.
You know, I know just in my personal inbox, there's a department store chain that's based here in Eastern Pennsylvania that mails on Sunday mornings. And I would love to know the results of that mailing. You know, it's like, okay, who's tuning in on Sunday mornings? But maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work. I don't know. Maybe they're paying attention. But testing time of day, that comes up to us oftentimes on our sort of best practices roadshow. What's the best time and day to test or to mail? Well, you know,
what works best: your lunch hour, or once you're home from work and you're checking through your mail. You know.
Yeah. So great. You know, great way to do a split test there. Second one is frequency. You know, how often to mail. You can test that sort of thing.
Can I go back real quick to delivery days and times?
Sure.
Just to share another nugget of information I got from the Email Insider Summit, a conversation with Delaquist from London. And he was talking about, you know, too often people are concentrating on days and times and sometimes miss the point of also testing some of the other time-based items, such as week of the month, understanding what the pay periods are for your particular, you know, your target demographic, and understanding if you're trying to sell something, wouldn't it be good to hit them when their bank account's full, and trying to test some of those other items like that. So I just wanted to share that.
Yeah. And going back to frequency then, I mean, if you did a split and you had your A group, you know, send once a week, you had your B group where you send maybe three times a week, you know, what you really want to look at then is how much drop off. Did you have more unsubscribes, more people actually leaving your list from the, you know, the three different sends versus the return on investment that you had there on the just once a week?
Sure.
The third piece was from names. I think this is a kind of a great debate within the marketing department. Should this come from ListTrack or should it come from the sales executive? You know, that's kind of the great debate.
And mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah.
I'm sure many folks that are listening and have had that debate around the marketing table. So yeah.
Do you focus on brand or do you focus on name recognition?
Yeah. Yeah. So A-B split, test it. You don't know what you don't know. The fourth one is probably the most impactful one that I can think of right off the bat, which is subject line testing. Probably the easiest thing to test.
Oh, yeah.
That has the most impact, probably the biggest piece of low-hanging fruit in the whole list.
And you see a lot of opinions on that, and you see very different opinions. You see people saying, keep it really short. No, keep it really long. No, put the name, your personalization name in there, and that'll work. And no, that'll freak some people out. So, you know, a lot of the advice that you hear is really based on the list that it was sent to, and your list can really vary from vertical to vertical, from cleanliness, you know, completely could change across the board. So you really, you know, have to test against your list to see what's going to work for your target audience.
Sure.
The fourth one is headlines. You know, above the fold, body copy is essentially what we're talking about, or rather the fifth one. So you're testing your above the fold body copy, calls to action, things like that is really what Megan's talking about here. A lot of different options there in terms of pricing, promotions, testing $10 off versus 10% off. I know in this sort of, you know, uncertain economic times that we're going through here, what's the best offer that's going to pull? What's the best price point for different things? What's the best wording to use? You know, when we're talking about nonprofits and donors and things like that, what are the right words to use to elicit a response? You know, in these uncertain times, the only way to know is going to be to test. we're really in most recent history, some uncharted territory here. Not that we haven't been here before, but in recent history, we're in uncharted territory. The sixth one is content. You know, Brent, you've spent a lot of time putting content together in different capacities here, and could probably speak to different things that you could.
Sure, there's different ways of talking to your audience. You know, whether you're talking to them on a more personal level or more on kind of a salesy level, and are you going to include more personalization, more content that is directly linked to that contact, a profiling type information, include that within the content, or whether it's just going to be the straight, you know, same content out to everyone on your list. So yeah, there's a lot of different things you can do there with your content.
You know, and within sort of content, number 7 and 8 and even 9, talking about graphics, layout, and your creative design.
You have to be careful there that you don't go overboard, I think. I think that's one of the things that, you know, if you're, especially when you're talking about a creative piece, a graphic, a call to action, that you're kind of being more focused on a specific creative element than kind of restructuring the entire layout. You know, it's definitely possible to test 2 completely different layouts, but you're not going to really know exactly which element really affected the results unless you're really specific with your test.
I think back to a test that we ran for one of our clients this summer, as there was a great debate as to, do we focus on the product or do we focus on people image, mm-hmm. and which one's going to pull better? And we ran tests for it, and lo and behold, the image that had the person in it, you know, that had people in there, actually pulled better and helped us sell the idea.
And that may go back to an old marketing Sherpa study with the iTools guy and the eye tracking. I remember reading it this years ago, saying people always look at people. It was mm-hmm. like when they look, that study that when it first came out and the marketing Sherpa guys were all over, it was like everybody looks in the top left first. Then no matter what the person looked like, no matter race, color, man, woman, good looking person, didn't matter. If it was a person, they looked at it. So, and you know, the only way to figure that out is to test. Number 10 on the list is personalization. Brent, you had mentioned that. That's sort of a hot button topic as well. Do we personalize the subject line? Do we put the person's first name in the subject line?
Yeah, like I said, I actually heard studies where there's a belief out there that at times you could almost scare off someone on your list because you're almost showing that you know too much about them without them giving you express permission to have that information.
Yeah, the big brother aspect.
Yeah, so there's kind of, you know, being testing that to see how careful you have to be.
Number 11, and I had mentioned it, is offers. Lots of different pricing options here with offers, and there's lots of stuff that you can pull out. And testing's really the only way that's going to tell you how people are going to respond to that. Number 12 is calls to action, using different, I mean, even if we just look at the graphical treatment of calls to action, a red button versus a green button, and what those types of colors elicit to somebody, a large button versus a small button.
Yeah, and that's one thing a lot of times you'll get pushback from print designers, where they're used to designing for in the print world and not having a button there, and they'll argue against that button because that button takes away from the creative, it takes away from the look. But that is the true call to action, and when you don't have that, you're not going to get the results. So again, you can prove that by doing a split test.
Sure. And there's a lot of debate on those buttons too. You know,
sure.
Which action words do you put in the button? Is it click here to buy now? Or is it buy now? Is it view my cart? I mean, there's a lot of different things you can try, and there's a lot of debate, and the testing could help solve that.
Number 13 is landing pages. You know, that's one thing that's kind of outside of the scope of what we do. But as interactive marketers, getting people to actually complete the job, complete the task is critical. So,
and I would point people towards the Google Optimizer, free, completely free to use, and you can run multivariate tests on your landing pages. We've actually been running one for quite a while where we gained some pretty insightful information as to whether or not playing a video when you got to the landing page. Like, I always thought, you know, I'm always kind of annoyed if something just starts playing without me having to hit the play button when I get to a page. But we actually were running a test where we had a video on a page. That video started playing by default. People were just watching it and then filling out the form that was right there, and that was some not expected.
I hope no competitors are listening. That's just we're on great terms with all the guys in our space, so we love you. Number 14 are advertisements and ads. You can test different types of ads that you're running. If you're a publisher, for example, you know, banners versus skyscrapers versus interstitials, et cetera, et cetera. And you can test different sizes and even versions of the ads as well.
Yeah. For example, does an ad fit right in and kind of mimic the content and look kind of like the content? Or is it going to stick out? Do you want it to, you know, real bright colors and really make it look like a banner? And what works better?
And number 15 is everything. Yeah. Test everything.
With one caveat, and Megan writes about this in the white paper, and that is limit the variables. You know, really, you should be testing against two variables.
Yep.
If you test more than that, then you're not going to know what you need to swap out and what is the piece that's affecting the test. So,
and I guess really what we mean here is kind of with each send, test. Don't let that opportunity go by without gathering some kind of useful information from your audience.
Test your marketing messages, test your promotional messages, test your transactional messages. Can you embed, you know, a little bit of a marketing push in your transactional messages that you're allowed to do that? But what's the right tone and what's the right way to do that? I mean, you can test in a lot of different aspects.
And Brent, I think the key word that you had said was opportunity. Mm-hmm. Every campaign that you're deploying is an opportunity to learn something more about how you can do better the next time.
Exactly.
And that's the beauty of email versus the print world. And that is you have live results, you have live data, actionable data, and you can make decisions on the fly and do things that you just can't do in the offline world. And that's why so many people have turned to the email space for their marketing.
And with that, we're probably out of time for today.
And we'd like to thank everybody for listening in to us this week. And we look forward to, again, hopefully sharing some tidbits and wisdom with you next week.
Talk to you all next time.
See you then.